What happens when a revolutionary dream teeters on the edge of collapse? In 1787, America stood at precisely this precipice. Fresh from defeating the world's most powerful empire, 13 independent states found themselves unable to pay debts, defend borders, or maintain order. Foreign powers still occupied American soil. States squabbled over trade and territory. The Confederation was unraveling. Into this chaos stepped three men writing under a shared pen name, crafting arguments so powerful they would shape not just their moment, but centuries of governance. These weren't ivory tower philosophers. They were political fighters wielding ideas as weapons, racing against time to save a nation that barely existed. Think of America in 1787 as siblings who just escaped an abusive household, free but vulnerable. The Federalist authors painted a stark picture. Divided states would become Europe's playground, with Britain and Spain already circling. History offered no comfort. Ancient Greek city-states destroyed each other before falling to outside conquest. The German Confederation limped along in perpetual weakness. But unity offered more than survival. A continental nation could negotiate as equals with European powers and create a massive internal market free from state-by-state tariffs. The vision was audacious: America as a future superpower. Here's where the authors turned ruthless diagnosticians. The Articles of Confederation weren't just inadequate, they were structurally doomed. Congress could request money from states, but couldn't enforce collection, like a parent asking teenagers for rent money. By 1787, consequences were catastrophic. Foreign creditors went unpaid, treaties violated, British troops refused to leave American forts. Madison studied every failed confederation in history, internal paralysis followed by external conquest. The solution required radical reimagining, a government acting directly on citizens through courts and laws, not through states as middlemen. This insight, that effective authority requires direct operation on individuals, revolutionized political structure and remains fundamental to American federalism. Madison's Federalist No. 10 brilliantly inverted centuries of political thought. Conventional wisdom held that republics must remain small to survive. Large territories needed kings or emperors. Madison argued the opposite. The real danger in republics was faction, groups pursuing their interests at others' expense. In a small republic, a single faction could easily dominate. But expand the territory? Suddenly you've got farmers, merchants, manufacturers, creditors, debtors, religious groups, regional interests, a kaleidoscope of competing factions. No single group could form a tyrannical majority. Extend the sphere, Madison wrote, and you take in a greater variety of parties and interests. Think of a small town election where one wealthy family dominates versus a diverse city where coalitions must constantly shift. This theory justified continental expansion and provided a framework for incorporating diverse populations. America's heterogeneity, often seen as weakness, became its greatest protection against tyranny. Today, amid deep polarization, this insight remains vital. The difficulty of forming stable majorities frustrates governance, but prevents permanent domination by any faction. The founders solved the tyranny problem through paradox. Use ambition to counteract ambition. Structure government so power-hungry officials check each other's overreach while defending their own authority. The president could veto laws, but faced impeachment. Congress controlled funding, but the president commanded troops. Judges interpreted laws, but depended on others for enforcement. This wasn't rigid separation, but calibrated collaboration, each branch possessing means to defend itself while requiring cooperation to govern. Institutional game theory. Design rules so pursuing self-interest produces good governance. Congress, the most dangerous branch due to its popular mandate and broad powers, was divided against itself. The House, elected frequently, stayed responsive to popular will. The Senate, chosen by state legislatures for longer terms, provided stability. This bicameral structure created additional legislative hurdles while balancing small and large states. The presidency needed unity for effective action, no committees diffusing responsibility. Yet the four-year term, Senate confirmation of appointments, and impeachment provisions prevented monarchical power. The judiciary's lifetime tenure secured independence necessary for impartial justice. Political theorists long insisted sovereignty was indivisible. Ultimate authority must reside somewhere. The Constitution defied this, splitting sovereignty between national and state governments. This wasn't compromise, but innovation. The national government would handle defense, foreign relations, interstate commerce, and currency. States retained education, criminal law, and property rights. This matched governmental scale to problems: national for uniform policy, local for regional knowledge. Critics warned the national government would swallow state powers. The authors countered that states possessed decisive advantages: more numerous officials, closer citizen connections, control over daily life. The powers delegated to the federal government are few and defined, Madison wrote, while those remaining in state governments are numerous and indefinite. This federal structure created multiple power centers checking each other while allowing states to experiment, becoming laboratories of democracy. It established multiple channels for citizen participation and multiple safeguards against tyranny. Modern debates about environmental regulation, education policy, and public health continue testing these boundaries, making the Federalist analysis of divided sovereignty perpetually relevant. The authors defended Republican government rule through elected representatives against both pure democracy and aristocracy. Democracy meant direct citizen rule, suitable only for small territories. Republicanism operated through representatives, allowing government to extend over larger areas while refining public opinion through deliberation. Different institutions received different forms of representation. House members, elected every 2 years, stayed close to popular sentiment. Senators, chosen by state legislatures for 6 years, provided stability and expertise. The president, selected through an electoral college, combined independence with accountability. Representatives shouldn't merely echo constituent opinions, but exercise independent judgment while remaining accountable through elections. The Constitution's Republican character showed in regular elections, prohibition of nobility titles, and guaranteed Republican government in every state. The authors weren't naive about Republican challenges: demagogues, factions, majority tyranny. Their solution was structuring Republicanism carefully, channeling ambition toward public good, establishing checks against both popular passions and elite domination, designing electoral systems elevating worthy representatives. The constitutional machinery aimed not to thwart popular will, but to refine and implement it effectively. The Federalist Papers close by acknowledging imperfection while urging acceptance. "I never expect to see a perfect work from imperfect man," Hamilton wrote. The Constitution represented practical compromise, not unattainable ideals. The amendment process, requiring 2/3 of Congress and 3/4 of states, balanced stability against adaptability, allowing evolution while preventing hasty changes. This vision of a living constitution, capable of adaptation while maintaining fundamental principles, remains among the Federalist Papers' most enduring contributions. No political system could anticipate all future challenges, making provisions for orderly change essential. In our era of polarization and constitutional controversy, these insights about balancing liberty and authority, the challenges of self-government, and the machinery required to make a republic function remain invaluable. When democracy feels fragile, when division seems insurmountable, when government appears broken, remember, the founders built this system expecting conflict, designed it to channel ambition, and trusted future generations to preserve what they created. The question isn't whether we'll face challenges, it's whether we'll meet them with the same pragmatism and principle that animated Publius.